Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. Back after a week away, certainly an eventful last 7 days, Les, since you've gotten back to town. Lawsuits in WWE. Boy, Vince's chair wasn't even warm, for he got served with this latest one. CM Punk on the hot seat, literally and figuratively, with the meeting at Chris Jericho, and then whatever seat he was sitting in at Raw was promptly removed, all of which we'll get into here over the course of the next hour, but Mr. Thatcher, you were away for the wedding of your stepdaughter in the beautiful island of Jamaica. And aside from being there for the nuptials, which obviously is first and foremost, you literally had one job. One job. I mean, I don't know how many people are aware of this, but, you know, outside of the Sheik, you were probably Rob Van Dam's favorite old school wrestler, for obvious reasons. I do not understand how this did not work out for you. There was no one there where you could have gotten some weed. What's happening?
I did check the food, and I'm not a gourmet by any stretch of imagination, but it was great. I did, you know, the bus driver taking us from the airport to Sandals Royal Caribbean, the resort where we stayed, was, you know, talking about all the different aged rums, right? And he said, if you get the 12-year-old, it's sacrilegious. You cannot mix it with anything. You got to drink it straight, be chase it with whatever you want, but it's against God's rule. Mix it. So,
wow.
And when we got out, I mean, he was telling us about how many different fruits grew on the island, and you know, this and that, and the other thing, and which it was he did it in a very fun way, and it was fun to hear. So we're getting our luggage, I got out and I walked to tip him, and he was nobody else around, and I said, you know, you were a great guide for food and drink and everything, but I said you didn't touch on the herbal product you grew up here in the mountains. He said, oh, man. I said, you think an old guy like me probably didn't even understand that. Oh, man, you're dangerous. But no, I didn't get to test the herbal delights that are so famous coming from the mountains of Jamaica. But the food was they had some food. I couldn't even get to tell you some of the names, but of course, obviously, different types of seafood and stuff. I tell you what, we did have at the they have like a English pub. You know, there's all kinds of different restaurants in the complex, and we did have fish and chips one night. The fish was almost sweet, to be honest. It was breaded just perfect, but it was almost sweet to the taste. The food was good. The one thing I didn't try on the buffet was oxtail.
Oh, you missed out.
Have you tried it?
Oh, you got to have it. I mean, there's got to be a next time. You got to find a Jamaican restaurant in Knoxville. I'm sure there is one. I'll Google it. I'll find one for you to go to. But yes, you can't miss that.
Had lamb with rosemary, leg of lamb with rosemary. That was on the buffet. But, you know, like I say, and it was, we had a hell of a time. As you know, because of skin cancer, I couldn't suck up as much sun as I would normally like. But using sunscreen, the high number, I was able to get a little sun. And, of course, the heat was intense. You know, what they were saying that I can't figure out, talking about how crazy the human traffic in the Jamaica airport getting ready for the return flight was. And I was told, oh, do you think this is bad? You should be here in July. But I'm thinking, why would I go to Jamaica in July?
Well, I mean, as much as you love sun, right? I mean, it's already, well, maybe. But, you know, that's just really when most folks can get the time off, I suppose, more than anything else.
I guess. I would guess that's true, too. But, yeah, we had a great time. The food was great. Service, I mean, it was luxury. It really was. It was great how the staff there, some of them, they would remember, you know, they must see how many hundreds of different faces every day, but some of, you know, they would remember you, you know, and they were so friendly. And I, you know, and the one thing, and this is, I don't know, important to anybody's vacation, but I caught it, and I mentioned to you before we started recording, was that when we were walking through the complex or in the restaurant, when one of the staff made eye contact, they said, good morning with a smile, good afternoon with a smile, good evening. I mean, it was always good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and with a smile. And then I noticed and mentioned to my wife, this is that smile and good morning thing, you know, is infectious. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, pay attention. I said, there are people like you and I here that are obviously tourists that have picked up on it and are saying to one another, you know? And I thought, why? How can we take this back to the United States?
Oh, yeah, right. Everybody in a better mood when they see each other. Of course, that nice weather and being on the water probably didn't hurt either.
No, it didn't, as a matter of fact. Yeah, shorts and T-shirt, you know, swim trunks, whatever, except for the wedding itself. But, I mean, that was, you know, that was, except for the ushers and the bride and groom, obviously, and the bridesmaids were, you know, dressed, you know, for the occasion. But so many others, you know, were just in the, you know, Caribbean casual, I guess you'd call it. But yeah, it was a great time. We were at Sandals Royal Caribbean, right on, just, I don't know, a couple miles from Sandals Montego Bay, but either resort, but would be great. So I highly recommend them if you get the opportunity. And of course, while I was gone, wrestling continued on without me, did it not?
It did. I mean, we mentioned Vince and this lawsuit, which is probably where we should start. Dave's got the full rundown, if you haven't already seen the story over the course of the week, in this week's edition of The Observer, which is up on the front page at f4wonline.com. I think rather than get into too much of the details, we'll just point out that there is a writer, Brittany Abrahams, who filed suit against WWE, named Vince, Stephanie, and some other executives in the company as well, SmackDown Vice President Ryan Callahan, some former writers listed as defendants as well. And the nuts and bolts of it is Miss Abrahams, who's African-American, is alleging that there was racist scripts, racist ideas pitched and actually used on television in WWE, to which any of us who've been spent any amount of time watching wrestling will say, yeah. But in 2023, you know, what you could get away with is very different from back in the day. And one of the things I wanted to point out specifically and turn the floor over to you, because I don't know if we actually ever addressed it on the air. I do not remember. But because the suit specifically mentions incidents involving scripting things for Bianca Belair and Apollo Crews, you definitely said to me off the air more than once that you were having a hard time believing Apollo Crews wasn't offended by the whole Nigerian prince or accent thing that they had him start doing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and actually, you know, also off the air, my friend Jim, who we discuss, you know, and his name comes up occasionally, who, you know, usually comes over and watches wrestling at least once a week with me, maybe sometimes more, he had wanted me to ask you if you were offended by Cruz and the accent and the whole, you know, Nigerian thing that all of a sudden he had picked up, and you said, well, I don't know, you know, how much his, you know, that is his background, but you don't know if this is really his. And obviously if you watch him on NXT, it is not his dialect.
Right. Well, he is Nigerian and he is capable, clearly, as we've learned, of speaking with the accent. And I basically deferred to Apollo. Like, if, for all I know, it was his idea to get on television. So I'll defer to him if he's willing to do it. Until I hear otherwise, even if it's not my cup of tea, I'll let it go. But maybe we learned, and it doesn't say anything from Cruz here, we should note, in the lawsuit. But apparently, there's some indications, at least, that he may not have been thrilled about it. And if he wasn't, he had every right not to be thrilled about it.
Yeah. And I'm not Nigerian, and I agree with you. And, of course, in the same context, Belair's name came up.
Mm-hmm.
And about as the lady who's suing said, You know, she had a reference about her go-home tagline was, don't make me take my earrings off and beat your ass. And she felt that was ghetto.
Yeah, those were Bianca's words.
Yes, yes. And the writer, being the newest, approached it and said, "Not don't want to offend anyone, but I think the mention scene includes racial jargon and offensive stereotypes, particularly her go home line, which is what I just mentioned about the go home line, was that, you know, don't force me to take my earrings off, kick or beat your ass." And Belair thought, but of course, here again, who are you? You know, the pecking order inside the industry, and especially within WWE, is such that, I would tell anybody who's starting there today, as you progress, be sure to realize to yourself, if you don't realize it, anybody else, where you belong in the pecking order, and don't overstep your bounds verbally or physically, because it doesn't pay. And and now with Belair at that point, I don't think she's in a position to call her own shots. I think she makes suggestions, but it's not like if you were Cena or you were Angle or you were Rock or Foley or Austin, you can say, "Hey, no, I'm not comfortable doing that." Then chances are you're not going to do it because, you know, of your position in the country, and in a country, yeah, sure, less in the company. But with Belair, I can understand. And you know what? With Cruz as well, it has nothing to do with their talent or the amount they have or the lack of talent. It has to do with where they are positioned and how they are looked at by management in terms of their drawing power. So I don't think either one of them really is, and it has nothing, believe me, it has nothing to do with their race. That I can, I don't care if they're green, black, yellow, blue, green, purple with polka dots. It is where they are seen as where they belong on the card. And until they have, you know, for some way or another, realize big numbers on the ratings, or they've drawn a big house, then they, you know, their power to speak up is much, much better all the time. But it's not just racial stuff either. I mentioned to you before we started recording is that back when they were doing the biography of Brian Pillman Sr., they came to Cincinnati to Kim Wood's home. Kim was strength coach for the Bengals and also one of the creators of hammer strength lifting machines and equipment. And a dear friend of mine and a mentor to Brian Sr. And had me meet him over there, and they recorded us for Brian's documentary. But they told me, "While you're here, we're doing a thing with Vince, and could we, you know, get some sound bites from you for that?" I said, "Sure." So one of the things they asked me was, "Has he ever offended you?" I said, I was quite uncomfortable when Vince and Shane decided to be in tag team action against Shawn Michaels and God. And the guy, you know, it was recorded, but I know this, I watched Vince's documentary. It never made the cut. But yeah, so they're not adverse to stepping over the line. And of course, back, you know, a few years ago, they stepped over it every night, and probably two or three times every night, with never mind racial stuff, but sexual innuendo and everything else, as those who are watching know. But I would say, and I am not a lawyer, and I've never been involved in a lawsuit, this young lady has some teeth to her claim, don't you think?
Oh, listen, there are plenty of people over the years who've worked there who have had very valid claims if they had chosen to take them to court. I'm looking at some of these other things here, too, and this one is a leap. I'm going to throw out a complete hypothetical here, so I want to make sure I offer that disclaimer before I get into this. But think about it and tell me that it's not that far-fetched a leap. So one of the other allegations in the lawsuit is regarding some storylines that were pitched for Mansoor, who is obviously Muslim. And one of the ideas was that he had a secret. And the secret was that he was behind 9/11. I mean, first of all, that's beyond the pale. Second of all, I would just fire you from my writer's room on behalf of your abject stupidity for even thinking you should bring that up. But here's where the leap is for me. Is it hard to imagine if we find out later over the course of this lawsuit, the timeline is such that perhaps Mansoor had heard about this and was so taken aback by it that he confided in someone like Mustafa Ali, who, in addition to obviously being Muslim, is a former police officer who, you know, for many people's definition, makes him a patriot, frankly. So,
right.
Let's go back and remember that Ali was home for quite a while after asking Vince for his release and not getting it. Would it be a leap to think that maybe Ali got hold of this and decided this was not the place for me?
It's a good chance of that, yes. You know, that's absolutely so. You know, and you know, we don't really get into the nuts and bolts of these 4,000-page contracts that are standard issue today for, I don't care if you're opening the show or you're the main event. And it's one of, you know, that's also one of the minus, I mean, yeah, you got a guaranteed contract, you got a downside, can't make less than this amount of money, but you also are, you're not an indentured servant, but you're there to do what that, you know, what the people that own you on that contract say. And here's the deal. You know, years ago during the territories, when it was a handshake or just a verbal agreement, then if I'm the promoter and you're creating a problem, I'm saying, hey, Vic, I'm giving you, you know, 2 weeks notice or four, whatever I need, you know, we're not seeing eye to eye. And so I need to make a change. And I think it's best for you as well. Or if you see where you're not being used the way you were told you would be when you made arrangements to come into that territory, all you have to do is look around, find a place to go and make. And the reason I bring that up is I can't think of anything worse than being stuck in a deal that I'm not comfortable in, being acting as like someone I'm not comfortable acting like, and not being allowed to change that or put a stop to it. And the same way from management, you know, I can't see the value of having a bunch of people under contract that are going to give me, not going to give me 100% of what they have every night because they're not happy with the position they have or the character that they're been put, you know, been given to act out or whatever. So, you know, as when I manage gyms, you know, there's a lot, I've seen gyms I've seen where, you know, you might want to come in and cancel your membership and, well, you know, are you moving? It's got to be like you got to move X number of miles away from this gym or you can't cancel the membership and that sort of thing. But my stance is always this. You come in to me when I was managing a gym and said, I'm not happy here. I want to, you know, well, you know what? I don't need you to be here and be unhappy. You can go someplace else and be unhappy or be happy. Because if you're unhappy here, then it's probably going to end up creating, whether it's a minor problem or a major problem for me, is going to be a problem. Does that make sense?
A complete sense. Yeah, absolutely.
So why, you know, and like with Mustafa, when they, you know, they buried, you know, I don't say they buried him, but okay, you want to get out of your contract. We don't want to let you out, so we'll send you home. Well, okay, that's maybe that they consider that punishment, but the point is you're still paying the guy.
Yes.
Right? And I think he would, you know, here's the thing. You come to me and say, Les, I'm not interested in doing this with you anymore. And I'd say, well, Vic, you got two more years on the contract. I don't care if you like it or you don't. When you get out of that contract, you're not going to have a lot of positive to say about Les Thatcher. And I would prefer to let you and say, you know, you say, well, you know, Les and I had, we came to differences. And I told him, I don't think I do this anymore. He said, well, Vic, I don't want to hold you up to anything and keep you, you know, if you're not happy here. So, yeah, let's work it out. Again, you know, I don't see the value. Do you?
None whatsoever. But they have chosen to freeze the. I mean, look, we saw that a few years ago. May he rest in peace with Brody Lee. You know, he was trying to get out of the contract when it was very clear that Vince had, for whatever reason, no longer become enamored of him and what he had to offer. And they made him wait and wait and wait. And they did that with a number of people. And listen, to some degree, yeah, you do understand it, particularly a few years ago with AEW just really getting launched and not wanting to hand people to the competition. But if you're so nervous about them getting away, then maybe you should have had better stuff for them to do in the first place.
Yes, there you go. You know, and you know, it makes no sense. I don't. And the other thing is, too, if you give this guy his release and he goes and signs with somebody else, if you give him his release today, he's going to sign with somebody else. If you make him wait a year, he's still going to sign with somebody else. And he's going to be less immured with you and how you handle him in a year than he's going to be if you let him go now. So to me, as a public relations, and the point is, this is not Steve Austin that came to you and said, I need to get out of here, man. I'm going to the opposition. I could see why you might want to block him. And again, this is not about Mansoor's talent, in-ring talent, whether he's the greatest we've ever seen or the worst. It's just a fact that he is actually a mid-card guy that's basically, you know, not in position to change or alter the direction of WWE in any way, shape, or form. So I don't get it, but it's control factor, I think. And knowing Vince, you know, and not that we're the closest people in the world, but that control is paramount in his game plan, I think.
Well, that is undoubtedly true. And then what about the poor kid? Like, what if he's basically been on ice since then through no fault of his own because of somebody else's bad idea?
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, you're going to suffer because of somebody else.
Yeah.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's. I'd be curious to see where this goes. And obviously, we know that WWE has a team of lawyers opposed to having just to go up against one. But I don't know. You know, I would guess this will be settled at some point. I don't think there's any way to close it out to be the benefit to WWE completely, do you?
No, I mean, I don't think, even if they end up winning the trial, and who knows, but that's the point. Who knows? If you end up at trial, all bets are off. So it would make more sense from a business perspective, cut the check and keep it moving.
Yeah, yeah, especially with the sale and the changeover and moving to the new office.
You don't need any headlines.
Yeah.
You need zero headlines. One press release that says we've come to terms on a settlement and move on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Now, that depends on the motivation, too, of the person who's filing the lawsuit. Perhaps Ms. Abrahams is going to march them into court whether they like it or not, which would be a whole different deal. But, you know, that it's a whole different matter. But if you're on WWE's side, you need to walk in there with a check and ask them to fill in the blank.
Right, right. I agree. And I was surprised that the numbers on Wednesday night were up a little bit for AEW.
Well, there was a lot of competition. I mean, four NBA playoff games on both coasts, a couple of NHL playoff games, and a show that was kind of just a show outside of a couple of moments. So I would say that number is basically a success given where they've been recently and the amount of competition that was around it.
I would agree 100%. Because I'll tell you, midway through that show, I mentioned my friend Jim again, who was here on Wednesday night. We both agree. It's a show. You know, I don't. About the special, what stood out wasn't about being special. It was like, okay, here we go again. More than anything else, Dax and Jeff Jarrett. Dax takes the loss. Here we got the tag team champions, and he's and I just shook my head. Jim says, "Oh hell!" You
know, it's, welcome back, Dax.
What? Yeah. It makes, I'm sorry, Tony Khan, I'm I know you're going somewhere, and I think Vic actually has that, and he'll give us his scenario on that. But I thought, here's a clever idea. I know, I understand. You beat a tag team champion in a singles match. It supposedly, it shouldn't hurt him. Years ago, if it was done properly, it wouldn't. But it wasn't 2 days after he won the title that they did something. They were setting up something else. And, you know, and to build to something else, that's the point. To me, you put the belts on Dax and Cash. I wouldn't disagree with that for any reason in the world. Now, let's get these guys a couple strong wins with middle of the card guys who you maybe know are going to beat them, but they give them that and let them show their offense and defense and everything, and that the people, yeah, man, FTR are cooking, man. They are really rocking and rolling. And then you want to start working some programs to get somebody where they barely get beat or they win on disqualification and start some sort of long-term deal. I'm cool with that. But right out of the bucket, you bring one of the tag team champions out and beat him in a single. Not any way in the world that I think that makes any sense.
Well, then you're going to love what they're doing next week.
Ah, there's where we go. And here's where Vic the Booker comes in. Go ahead, man.
Well, as I understand it, it's going to be Jay Lethal versus Cash next week. So I guess Tony was tired of beating Dax. He decided Cash should have to wrestle a singles match too. And, you don't have to be, you don't need to be an expert to see where this is going. Lethal is likely going to beat Cash. That way, both members of the Lethal Jarrett team have wins over FTR in singles matches, and somehow singles wins will qualify them for a tag team title shot. There is one thing, though, I do want to say about that particular match, Dax and Jeff Jarrett, because we've been talking about Jeff when he shows up in these six-mans with Trent and Orange Cassidy and all sorts of other people on the other side who were doing crazy things. And we said to ourselves, Jeff has managed to pull out every old school trick in the book in these matches without putting himself in harm's way. And these matches have been working for the people in the building getting over, proving that a lot of those things that are in his bag of tricks still work. So maybe more of you should be using these things. But we haven't seen him actually have a real wrestling match. And the question was whether or not he's just completely lost it and is, skating by on the tricks that he still knows strictly and nothing else. Or if, as I wondered aloud while watching some of these six-mans, has he just decided, I am just not going to risk my life with these kids who do all sorts of crazy shit.
I don't blame him for that if he does.
And the minute he walked into the building this past week and saw Dax's name on the board, he said, you know what? Tonight we're going to wrestle. And still, not what Jeff Jarrett used to be 15 years ago, but who is. But he had a heck of a professional wrestling match and a very different match than the kind of matches he'd been having with everybody else until Dax showed up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And I don't know. It's just, but the show itself was, there were the run-ins, there were the interferences, and I thought, yeah, it's AEW. I didn't miss anything while I was in Jamaica at all. And the crazy thing is, the big match that they'd been actually tried to build without the two participants actually having a match to get to this match was Valkyrie and Jade. And it did pull the best numbers, I'm not sure why, out of boredom maybe, I don't know, but it was exactly what I expected it to be, and that was not a main event match or a great match, it was just a match. And for the most part, the fans sat on their hands.
Yeah.
I didn't expect a lot out of it, and I didn't get a lot out of it.
Now, I want you to talk to me a little bit about the way that match, not the build up to it, but just the fact that Taya, obviously, as part of getting the match, could not use her finishing move, which is, of course, the same one Jade Cargill uses. And the match did do well in the ratings from a perspective of, going by the quarters. It actually did improve on the previous quarter, which unfortunately is not a common thing for the women's matches. But on this night, there was a match that they'd been building for a while. And so there was some interest. I'm concerned that after seeing what they were interested in, they numbers for the women's matches may have some issues over the next few weeks, particularly with the finish, though. Forget whether or not they worked well together. My whole thing is, I understand that the idea is that she's at a disadvantage, Taya is, because she can't use her move. But she gets pinned because she's thoroughly flummoxed, not once, but twice, about what to do instead. And I can't imagine anybody back in the days when you were sharing locker rooms with some of the best and the brightest who would have been told, well, you know, you can't use your move tonight and you're going to get beat because you go for it and then you can't figure out what to do next.
Yeah, that's sad. Boy, she is stupid. Yeah,
I mean,
wait, what? I will give you an example. I can go way back to a situation where Luthez and I were, I forget who we were talking to. We were at somebody's talk show or something. I don't remember anyway. And the interviewer was not part of the wrestling community. This was somebody on radio. I don't remember. But the point I'm getting at is this. They mentioned to Lou, what is your big move, big whole finish, you know, your submission or whatever. And Lou looked, he said, I don't have one in particular. And the guy looked like, Lou said, show me a guy that's got one move to win with. I show you a guy I'll beat every night.
Doesn't get any simpler than
in
that.
In the story.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And if they wanted to get Valkyrie over, she would have, you know, hey, and that would have been the pitch, right? And what if, she, you know, well, anyway. But, yeah, that's the fact that she doesn't know anything other than that hold is, how did she get here to begin with?
Right. Yeah, exactly. See, to me, the thing isn't so much that she lost because she couldn't use it. I get there's a moment in the match where you kind of just blank out because this is what you're used to doing when you've got someone in a compromising position and you grab her for the hold. And obviously you have to let go. And in a flash, you know, something happens and you get beat, but not where you have to like stand there and ponder it for a second more than once over the course of the match. Like, come on, that was overkill.
You know what also stands out about this, and never really stopped to think about it, but how absurd this particular conversation becomes once when you stop to think that every Tom, Dick, and Harry, every Jack and Jill in that company, how many false finishes do they all go through every night that uses their finisher and six other people's?
That is
right?
True. Yes. Yes, that's true.
If I can't teach anything else to the current youth of America, please get some consistency in your storylines. And that's as inconsistent as it really gets if you sit and look at it in the overall picture.
Well, sir, there could be some consistent storylines on the way. CM Punk looking like he's going to be returning on June 17th for this new Saturday show. Apparently, he had his meeting with Chris Jericho because apparently all things and all roads in AEW must go through Jericho and meet with his approval. Last time I checked, his name was not on the ownership papers, but I digress. In any event, it appeared to have gone reasonably well. And I guess the way they'll frame this is that Jericho represented the concerns of the locker room and everybody who allegedly didn't want him back. So whatever, whatever. Punk was willing to go through with the meeting and he did so. So it seems like all systems are go for June 17th. I mentioned this to you, you know, before we get to the WWE story with Punk and WWE unveiling a new championship, which we'll also discuss before this program comes to an end. But Punk and this whole Saturday thing, not only bringing some sense maybe back with a little influence on what's going to be happening on this Saturday show, but the whole thing, working it out with Jericho, and I'm just looking at this and thinking, man, it's just so weird to me. Like, where is the owner? I mean, I get that obviously behind the scenes, he must be saying this is what we're doing, right? But if you're Punk, the other part of this is if Dave is correct. I mean, Dave's numbers, I'm sure, are correct, but whether or not AEW is actually getting the numbers Dave quoted, we don't know yet for sure. But Dave noted a couple of weeks ago that the average run-of-the-mill price for live programming at Warner Brothers Discovery is $500,000 an hour. So if you have this two-hour show and you're on 52 weeks a year, essentially they're giving AEW $52 million for CM Punk because they're only giving them the show basically on the promise that Punk is going to be a part of it, be the anchor of it. So it reminds me of the whole thing with Crockett Promotions and Ted Turner buying the company, how Ric Flair said years later, he lamented the fact that he was not aware that one of the only reasons, maybe the only reason Turner was willing to buy was because he got Ric Flair. And if he didn't get Flair, he wasn't going to buy. Because Flair obviously could have used that to leverage himself into a much better financial situation. If I'm CM Punk and I'm now even remotely aware that this $52 million television program is only happening because I'm going to be at the center of it, you know, my tricep might start bothering me here in the next couple of weeks, Les. And maybe the only thing that could fix it would be a raise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, here's something else that I've, that, you know, in sitting and thinking, knowing we were going to do a show today and having realized that this was way back on Monday, here's, if, you know, the conspiracy theories of, course, have been thrown out there. Punk's looking to apologize to WWE and to go back and this and that, the other thing, or they're looking to steal him away from Tony Khan and on. Here's the deal. Let me tell you from my experience from working within that company, if there was going to be talk of possibly stealing Punk away, or Punk wanting to be stolen away, or whatever, we wouldn't even know he was in the city of Chicago when Triple H was there. I'll be quite frank with you, because that company is about secrecy. When I knew Memphis was going to be shut down and moved to me, I was asked, let's don't share that with anyone till we're ready to make the public announcement. But people within my roster, my company, knew nothing about it because I wasn't going to blow the deal, you know? And so, I think it was exactly what they said, you know, Punk was with some of these guys on a flight out of Florida. So he decided to stop in and say hello. He did. I can imagine Paul talking to him, which I didn't see a problem with anyway. But can I imagine? Did we mention Control earlier in this show?
We will get to it if we haven't already. But yeah, especially since Vince basically rewrote Raw from wherever he is.
Yes, and said, "Get him out of here." And that being a Vince call does not surprise me in the least. Again, it's about control and about power.
Let me jump in and ask you one question from the other side of that, though, because honestly, probably shame on me. The thought had not even occurred to me until you started talking about this. If you're Punk, because like you said, if it was WWE that was genuinely interested, or if there was any kind of decisions or discussions, I should say, between them, formally or informally, we would never have heard about it. You're right. But if you're Punk and you happen to run into those guys after your meeting with Jericho and doing some commentary for the MMA promotion he does commentary for in Florida, and you all happen to be getting on the same plane going back to Chicago, which by all appearances was a coincidence, and they say, hey, you should come. If you're Punk, are your wheels turning? Like, oh, shucks, guys, really? You think I should go? I mean, do you not think that maybe at least part of him was like, oh, well, here's a little needle for Mr. Jericho and everybody else. I'll just go hang out at Raw.
Yeah, that could be too. Yes. It very well could be. But I thought, my God, we're going to have this is going to be an international incident before the week's out.
Right.
Which it didn't get that way. But yeah, and like I say, all the conspiracy theories about why he was there and so forth. And again, you know, but to me, I'd be curious how they sit down inside the company and in AEW and decide. Vic, if you're part of that, do I come to you? And if you're one of the wrestlers, Vic, do you like the Elite or do you like Punk?
Yeah, how do you decide?
I like the Elite. Okay, you're on the Wednesday show then. I'm sorry. This is not, wow. It's not, I don't understand how you run a business like that. again, if you're one of my vice presidents, if you have any kind of title with my company, I'm holding you to a higher standard. And his VIP executive vice presidents could not be held to that higher standard. They can be now, but they certainly weren't when this incident went down. And then, whatever. But now I noticed on the All Access show that, you know, that was in their first night in Chicago since the incident. And both the Jacksons were a bit nervous about it. You know, well, we're going to go out and, yeah. And you could see the reaction from some of the other talent behind stage. My God, everybody in the building is booing those guys. Yeah, they sure are. Wonder why.
Yeah, what'd you think was going to happen?
Yeah, if there's a shot you could have called, this was the one.
Yeah, right? Really? God.
No speculation at all. Yeah. But, yeah, it's, I'll be honest, I found All Access to be more entertaining and actually a bit more informative to me than I did the 2-hour show that was on before it. Yeah. Well, you know, you see another side. We're not going to, first of all, I want to mention too, real quick, going back to the last show we did, a cut and paste guy told me that one of our irate listeners said that because I quoted Bret Hart and said that why couldn't people listen, that I am trying to take the entertainment from millions of fans who love.
What?
Yes. I just, you know, I don't want to take, my God, if you love seeing one guy jump on, dive over the rope and knock down 14 others, more power to you. I'd like to smoke what you're smoking. But I don't, and I don't want to, but I would like to see a balance. I don't want you millions of happy fans who love Orange Goldberg and that sort of thing. I don't want to deprive you of that. But I would like to see something, some wrestling as well. And please, I know we call it all wrestling, and it's a general word now. But I'm talking about good, solid wrestling matches, like, and some of the good, solid stories, like the Bloodline thing. So, yeah. But I don't want to deprive you from watching El Gran Vikingo things. I don't want to take it away from you. If you're happy with it, if it entertains you, I'm cool with that. But I'd like to see some of the stuff that that I think is professional wrestling as well. I just like to see a nice balance. So I wanted to apologize to that young fellow or female or whatever it was that thought I was trying to ruin life for a million people. Oh, God. Wish I had that kind of power, by God.
Less in the days of the National Wrestling Alliance and its heyday, how many world champions were there at one time?
There was only one champion, and go ahead.
In the AWA, how many different versions of the AWA World Championship did they have?
One.
You realize that after the next show in Saudi Arabia, where a new world champion is going to be crowned for Monday Night Raw, we'll technically have 3 world championship belts between the 2 that Roman Reigns holds and whoever ends up winning this thing in a few weeks?
Wow. That makes no sense at all, does it?
God almighty. What? First of all, I have never understood why they feel it's so necessary to have a quote-unquote world champion on television each and every week on each individual show. And listen, I realize that the business model is very different. We're talking about territories versus one global promotion. I do understand that. But there were dozens of thriving territories in the United States of America for 70 years that did not have the world champion on their show every single week. And some weeks we're lucky to have him for 90 seconds in a taped promo he did from someplace else. And the business worked just fine. Do we really need to have all these different... And after nearly 1,000 days of Roman Reigns as champion, how well accepted is this person going to be after they win in Saudi Arabia?
Exactly. And if we're honest about it, regardless of what style, or if we've been watching this, why are we concerned with Roman not keeping it a while longer? Because it has just built more momentum for him and for those, the Codys and the Sammys and the KOs and the guys who are chasing him. Now there is actually a procession of challengers for, and plus some, you know, there's others too. I can't imagine that Big Drew and you know, is going to be left out either. McIntyre, I don't get it. My thought is this: I've got one champion. I've got SmackDown. I've got Raw. Or if it's AEW and I've got Wednesday night and Saturday night with the filler show thrown in on Friday, why can't my champion float around?
Thank you.
And this way, if he happens to be working a program on SmackDown, then you should be getting your next couple challengers battling to get that spot for when he comes to Raw. And then when he's at Raw, it's back, you know, your people on SmackDown can be trying to work their way to that number one challenger spot. So, yeah, I think it creates more versatility and more chance for more storylines.
And the funny thing is, WWE actually did this right for a very short period of time at the beginning of the brand split. Remember, they created that brand new championship that The Undertaker held, I believe, and The Rock held, and Brock Lesnar beat The Rock for it at SummerSlam years ago. But the whole thing about the initial brand split was that one champion, two brands, and the champion will go between each one, and when he loses, whatever brand drafted him gets him back full time. Why is this so difficult? What was it about this that Vince McMahon just despised? Maybe it was the fact that that's the way it had worked for so many years. I don't know. But
I don't know. Well, here's something, too. In your notes, it mentions Triple H talked about how Roman Reigns is nearly 1,000 days as champion, but also lamented, I'm going to repeat, also lamented that Reigns negotiated in his contract that he didn't have to defend the title frequently.
Well, whose fault is that?
Well, you know what? That was always part of any title, whether it was the Mid-Atlantic title, the world title. Of course, with the world title, the champion wasn't living in Charlotte. He was living wherever, and he wrestled in Atlanta, Charlotte, and Tampa, and blah, 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 blah. And there were regional televisions. So, but my point is this, with that, it's better if the title isn't defended frequently, because it means more when there is a title match.
Yes.
And so there, right there, and as a heel, Rome, you know, that was one of the things that the heel champions would use occasionally. As the promoter comes and say, listen, I want you, this guy has earned a title shot, and my answer as a heel champion is, he's going to have to wait 30 days. I only have to defend this title once every 30 days. So now we've got 30 days to build to that match and to give it some more teeth and to make it more important and hopefully sell more tickets. Make sense?
Perfect sense. And it's really your job as whoever's putting together the show and whoever's coaching the announcers and whoever's doing the announcing to give the champion a presence on the show even when he's not there. His shadow should be over absolutely everything important in the singles division, and you should be mentioning him at every opportunity because he's the guy everybody's after. So even if he's not there, you should hear his name a million times anyway.
Yes. Well, you know, back in the day right here in Knoxville, when Terry Funk had the strap, and we were building toward a match between he and Ron Fuller, Terry wasn't here. Terry'd send in clips. We would roll him into the show. You know, it could be an interview. It could be just some highlights of him defending the title against someone else, you know, or something like that. But, you know, yeah, you didn't need him to be there every minute of the day, you know, to get the point over. it actually puts you in a position to be a little more creative, I think, because, well, and there again, I talk about in AEW, I know I'm jumping back and forth here, how they just throw a story together and well, these guys knew each other 15 minutes, so now here's the deal, and 30 minutes after that, here's a match, and why aren't you coming to watch it? Because you haven't put any teeth in it. You just threw something together. But that's the thing, the build. Why? What's so important about the Super Bowl? What's so important about the World Series? What's so important about the NBA playoffs? Because it took 162 games or 78 games or 18 games or however many games a damn league to get to the title match and build suspense and build anxiety and build anticipation and build whatever else, Vic. Am I making sense?
Yes. And at the end of the day, there can be only one. It's not like the team that loses the Super Bowl goes and plays in the, you know, the European Football League next year and they get a championship too.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, obviously you and I aren't going to change it, but what we're saying, I'm sorry, for the millions that out there who I offend, obviously, weekly, we're right. It's like it comes to any other big story. I mean, you know, whether you're watching a good movie, it takes 90 minutes or 2 hours to get through. It's you're hooked on it because of the way the story is evolving to the big climax. The same with a dramatic television show. The same with a dramatic book that you're reading. And why? And this business was built on that foundation. I don't care if you flip and flop and dive and do 4,000 false finishes. Still, the meat of the story is what I just explained, is it not?
It is. And I really think, and I know they don't intend to do this with the addition of this world championship, but I think that they're unintentionally undercutting the best thing they have, not just Roman, but the bloodline. I mean, why would you limit that to one brand, first of all, when you can have not just them appearing every so often on both shows, but again, like I said, back in the day, it was the announcer's job in the territory and the promoter to make sure that the announcer did it, to make sure that the world champion was a part of a show, part of the show, even when he wasn't there. And the idea that you could be still discussing everything happening with the bloodline and Owens and Zayn is a plus, not a minus. So why would you restrict it to one show or the other? It makes no sense to me. So, you know, they're actually doing a disservice to the one thing that's working better than anything else.
Yeah, you're absolutely, I agree with you 100%. Well, you know, here's another thing. If you and I are calling, let's say we're calling Raw, and Roman is a champion, and he's in a program with, I'm just grabbing names here, Cody on SmackDown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking, you and I are talking about the challengers that are being built, on Raw to meet Roman. And part of our conversation is saying, you might jump in and say, Les, you know, Roman's having a tough time with so-and-so on SmackDown. It may be him coming here as champion. Don't get too hooked in on Roman. So now we may be giving you a reason to watch SmackDown, but we're also adding a little more fuel to the story. Is it going to be Roman? Maybe it's not.
I don't know. Well, what do we know?
Yeah, exactly.
One last mention, though, before we wrap this up.
All I want to say is, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, they're going to crown a champion here whether we want one or not. And so if you're going to have to take a look at this, and we will, obviously, as we get closer to it and they give us a little more detail about who's going to be involved in this and how it's going to play out. But just looking at the roster available to you, and obviously not knowing where everyone's going to be, because for all I know, Seth Rollins will be on SmackDown next week. But if you're asking me, we're going to do this anyway, so who should be the champion? Seth Rollins has been the company guy in the nicest possible way you could say he's a company man over the last, I don't know, year and a half plus. From Cody Rhodes going 3 against him, and all the other things and the situations they've put him in and the stuff they're asking him to do, even if it's not our favorite thing with the outfit and the shouting and all that other stuff, you have not been, you know, we've talked about it jokingly, you know, he's committed. Well, he is.
Right.
And I think that commitment should be rewarded. If we're going to do this, I think they should go with Seth.
I won't disagree with you, but I want to take his horrible laugh and his horrible costuming away from him. Can we do that? No, Seth L. performer. There's no two ways about it. He is. And yeah, you're right. He's busted it. He's been a company man. He's busted his ass. And yeah, he's deserving. There's no two ways about it. But right now, you know, there again, like, wow, you know, this Roman thing is growing such great legs, and the bloodline thing, and we've gotten so much mileage. Let's get rid of it quick before it, you know, what's your panic?
Yeah, I don't know.
Start building something to follow it, and as then as it, you see it wind down, as the people start to not be as excited about Sammy and what he might do to but and that whole thing, then pull the trigger. But now I think would be the wrong time.
I am in agreement with you, sir. But, you know, they're doing it anyway, so we'll see what they decide.
They damn sure are. I'm interested in seeing what the draft does, honestly. I'll tell you what, the last draft was about as boring as it could get. I mean, there was no, you know, I mean, it wasn't exciting. There was no big surprise. I mean, it was just, it was, hey, we need to do this. Let's get it over with and don't worry about it. So I hope it's far more entertaining than that. But I see that Ripley is not listed with Judgment Day.
I believe they addressed that on Raw. Don't get me the line. Maybe I should go double check this Raw report. But I want to say they said she was going with them. If they got that, they would be drafted. There was somebody who was in a team that was assured they'd be. Oh, you know what? That's so funny that it came out that way. The person who was assured it would be a team, so it was probably tongue in cheek, was Chad Gable. That he and Otis would be going somewhere as a package deal. But let me go back and double check this Raw report, because for some reason, I have it in my head that something along those lines was addressed with respect to Rhea Ripley, but I'm not 100% sure of that.
So I did see that. Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought while I look this up.
I see Madcap Moss is not Madcap anymore.
Well, it's about time.
I know. Oh, and while you're looking, one of the major things I thought was a big plus on AEW was Roddy Strong being signed.
Yes, that was a good moment.
Yeah, this guy, technically, I'll tell you what, one of the best damn workers in the business. I don't care what size, his age, or anything else. It's you're hard-pressed to find a bad Roderick Strong match. Now, I would love to see Roddy and Dragon. And some good wrestling. Never mind 40 slaps and 40 punches and 40 kicks and that shit. I'd like to see those two guys really, you know, work a hell of a match, and it's possible. Roddy and Adam will make a hell of a team. You know, I've said it here before. If I had a promotion that could get Undisputed Era back together, I'd do that as quick as I could too. But anyway, yeah, Roddy's hell of a hand, and they will do well to use him. Right, that's for sure. So, what is your survey or your checking on facts?
Refreshing my memory here with respect to whether or not Rhea was mentioned on Raw in terms of going with the group as Judgment Day, and I do not see anything here. So, maybe this was just wishful thinking on my part, but I'd hope they'd mentioned it. Let me see. Ray and by the way, and this is something we'll talk more about in a couple of weeks when we get ready for another week or so when we get ready for Backlash in Puerto Rico. But the assignment that our buddy Damian Priest has now, it's one thing to be in a tag team with, no matter how seriously he takes it, and we know he does, a non-wrestler in Bad Bunny. But now you've got to walk him through a street fight. And that's a challenge in and of itself that I think we could spend some time on next week.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, it's a whole different type of match, and it'll take a different mindset completely. You know what though, he and Logan Paul, both those guys deserve some sort of recognition for, because you know we have seen disastrous, celebrity involvement, obviously. But neither one of these, as disastrous as we guess they might be, they both were very successful. So, yeah. And I'll tell you what, with Priest, you know, my history with him goes back. Well, you've seen him at the Monster Factory, too. Mm-hmm. But my history goes back to working with him at the Monster Factory and everything. He's a hell of a hand. And he's growing up there. I've said this before, too. I would have never turned him heel. I thought he was a great spokesman for his, you know, for the
Oh, he could have been the people. Latin star that they've been looking for since the new Rey Mysterio. You know, they've been looking to replace Rey Mysterio since Rey Mysterio walked through that door, oddly enough. But, that you know, there was somebody there who that could have been that guy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And still could, I guess. But anyway, but yeah, that's, yeah, he's going to have his work cut out for him. Of course, he's, you know, he's a heel. And I've wrestled in San Juan.
Best of luck.
The last thing I ever wanted to be was a heel in San Juan, to be honest. But yeah, that should talk about some intense heat. There should be some on that show.
I sincerely hope so.
Yes.
Oh.
I'd be curious, and we're not. I know we're about running low on time. I don't want to bring it, but I want to mention. Vic was running some future shows by me that AEW has lined up for May and June.
Oh, yes.
And some of the pre-sales. And, man, I hope they got a hell of a walk-up is all I can say.
Yeah, a bunch of dates not looking really good.
Yeah, they really aren't. I will say this. They are going to some smaller clubs, which... Here is the place, Tony Khan. I know you're not listening to me and probably never would, but here is where you take some of these young guys who need to be schooled in how to work a professional wrestling match, and you give them to guys like Roderick Strong, Dustin Rhodes, et cetera, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and let them put in 20, 25 minutes if they're going to put the time in. And they'll learn more in that 25 minutes with veterans like that than they'll learn out there doing all their big spots with their buddies. And it will benefit you much more down the road in the long term.
So here's a quick rundown of a handful of these shows coming up. And these advances you can see for yourself in the Observer as well. Next week in Baltimore, they're currently around 3,300. Detroit on the 10th of this month, 5,200, not bad. House show in Corbin, Kentucky, a place you are very familiar with, currently at 1,300 for May 12th, Les. And you talked about once having Andre the Giant there to show on the territory. It did a little bit more than 1,300 for that house.
Yes, I'm guessing. I said to you, closer than not, I'm going to guess between 7,000 and 8,000 people with Andre.
Hmm. And that is, now, just for context, because obviously this is both companies now. Every wrestling company on television is global these days. So, you know, it's not like they're coming back to Corbin, Kentucky anytime soon, where you had to be in Corbin every week or every other week, and it's near one of the biggest cities in the territory. So that same week, you had the same talent, basically. How many miles away in Knoxville?
90 miles,
and
roughly.
How many did you draw in Knoxville that week?
I'm guessing close to a sellout.
Yeah.
Probably, the same number. What? I'm not sure. It would have depended. Now, if it were in the summer, we might have been outdoors at the amphitheater. If it were the winter, it was on a Sunday, we would have been at the Coliseum. But yeah, we were drawing pretty steady houses. I mean, I won't tell you it was a sellout every night or every week because it wasn't. But it was close. I'd say three quarters full, or in that on an average anyway.
Generally speaking, did you find Corbin to be one of the stronger house show towns in the territory?
It was steady. It was steady. Harlan, Kentucky, Corbin were both steady clubs. Corbin ran every Monday night. Outdoors at the stock car track where we ran outdoors in the summer, and I forget the name of the building where we ran indoors in bad weather in the winter.
That weekend house show, 512 in Corbin, Kentucky, 513 Salem, Virginia. Is that part of Mid-Atlantic? Have you ever run there?
Salem, Virginia, yeah, that would be part of Mid-Atlantic, yeah. And like I say, my hat's off to Tony Khan for hitting these, because these small clubs, your overheads, well, your travel with your people are going to be high, and your salaries are still the same. But these are the clubs, these are the house, what I call house shows, where you take your less experienced guys in and put them with your veterans and let them learn. And that way they're not doing it on TV, and you're not going to water down your television show. So, and again, That's from experience. It's not, has nothing to do with old school, new school, or any other school. It's just from experience in the industry.
Yeah, a couple of these houses before we wrap this, just to mention, since we got down this road talking about being a little nervous about the size of the house at this point, and obviously the walk-up could be big and could be a difference maker. Clearly, a lot of things going on close to Memorial Day in Las Vegas, including a bunch of shows from AEW, but their Dynamite the week of is only at 4,200, and their debut in San Diego the following week right now is only at 2,800. Now, there's obviously still time to turn that around, but I'd be alarmed at that if I were them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, you know, I don't, you know, I'm not too familiar with those markets in terms of past history, and I don't know how much history AEW has. Well, they have history in Vegas, but you will find, you know, and having handled towns myself, big, you know, big cities as well as small clubs, you're going to find some towns have big walk-ups and some towns have big advances. But, you know, it's great to have a town that has both, obviously, but you'll find a pattern in most cities to be one or the other.
Well, they'll learn a little something about these cities as they make these runs, because they got a bunch of house shows, too, in the month of June in Tupelo, Huntsville, Alabama, Colorado Springs, and going to Canada as part of that Owen Hart Cup tournament that Tony Khan mentioned on TV.
That I want to say my hat's off to Tony Khan, on not because he made the announcement. I don't care who made the announcement, but the way they're doing the Owen Hart thing, and having the finals in Calgary and the whole, that's beautiful. That's great, I think.
That is well thought out.
Yes, absolutely. And I can tell you this, I don't know Martha Hart, Owen's widow, but if it weren't thought out, she wouldn't be a part of it.
I'm fairly certain, yes.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
And credit to them for the way they're handling that. Everything around the own this year and last year, it's been done really well.
Yes, absolutely.
And they deserve credit where credit is due, and that's something they deserve credit for. So we're going to get ready to wrap up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Now that you're back, tanned, rested, and ready, I suppose you're prepared to get out on the road as well, do some training camps?
I would love to. Well, I'm going to be on the road in July anyway, headed to Waterloo, Iowa.
That's right.
I would, if I've got no legs or one leg or whatever, I'm 63 years in the making, brother. I'll be in Waterloo without question. But yeah, if you would be interested, I'd love to work. Seminars or weekend training camps. I'm certainly not going to take any bumps, but my mind is still sharp enough to teach. And if you'd be interested in booking me for any of those, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Be more than happy to send you out the information and get with you on exactly what goes on during those seminars or those weekend training camps. And, of course, if you're in the pro wrestling tees, you can go to Pro Wrestling Tee website and come up with the first ever pro wrestling t-shirt ever put on the market in 1972. And it's a Briscoe Booster shirt put out by Jack, Jerry, and myself. Artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can pick that t-shirt up there with God knows how many others of all different types. And if you happen to be a Les Thatcher guy, you can get I'm a Les Thatcher guy shirt as well. And Wrestling from the Heartland, Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2 with 3 should be debuting any time now. Over 6 hours of content on each. Both are 2 DVD sets, matches and interviews and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. And you can go to joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com to pick those up. The Brian Pillman Show's Anthology 20th Anniversary, 4 DVD set, 15 hours of content. All 4 of those great shows of 98, 99, 2000, 2001. Matches, interviews, auctioned footage, awards, and so many extras. PillmanShows.com are the two addresses I mentioned earlier. And I saw, too, that Joe, I dug out what's left of Pillman merch from the 99, Pillman 99 show at the old Cincinnati Gardens. Joe has a couple of the Pillman 99 event t-shirts, brand new, and not reproductions, not copies or knockoffs. They are from the original batch. also some of the programs originally, which he had me sign my welcome page in there. And those are, when those are gone, those will be gone. And he's got those on the Joe-Ombrowski site or the filmandshows.com site. So if you're interested in those, you can check those out there as well.
Well, I'm sorry that Mother Nature's not cooperating and giving you Jamaica-like weather this weekend.
Well, I'll tell you what, when I got off the plane in Charlotte and stepped outside, I thought, damn, snow's about to hit. I came back to the States with in April, the end of April, when it was in the mid-50s and windy. So, yeah, I'm sad that Jamaica weather didn't follow me home.
You sure that's not part of the prizes they give out to everybody who makes the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame? Is there not a trip to Jamaica involved in this?
I wish I'd go back.
All right, we're going to put a cap on this one. Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly is in the books for this week for the legend Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it with us here. And we'll be looking forward to talking to you again next week.